everybody, it's Aaron. We're back with another Bald Move TV, the officially unofficial podcast for all of television. The subset of all TV that we are zooming in on today is Netflix's new cyberpunk film noir series, Altered Carbon, starring Joel Kinnaman. If you wonder where the hell you've seen Joel Kinnaman before, he was the governor from New York, Frank Underwood's rival on the last few seasons of House of Cards. Mm-hmm. He's been in a few other things, but that's the one that I most remembered him from. Oh, yeah, he also played Alex Murphy in the updated RoboCop that came out a couple years ago. And he also had a minor role in Suicide Squad. But he's the lead guy in Altered Carbon. Jim, what did you think of this television show?
I enjoyed my first two episodes with it. I think
we should say that we are two episodes into Altered Carbon.
Yeah. So if you're thinking during this conversation that we have a holistic view of this thing, you'd be wrong. We have only seen two episodes, and I'm probably gonna say up front that a lot of my criticisms, I think, of this could potentially be, I guess, assuaged by the end, by the next eight episodes. And I'm hoping they will be, because I have a lot of criticisms of the show, but also I think there are a lot of positives about the show as well.
Yeah, and that's, yeah, I have the same kind of thing. Like, I don't know, because there's a couple things. Well, you know what? I don't even talk about my problems first. I guess
Let's say we haven't read the book that this is based on either.
Right.
Which is what, Richard Morgan, is that his name? Mm-hmm. Wrote a series of novels about this Takeshi guy, Takeshi Kovacs, and this is the first in the series.
Right.
It's called Altered Carbon.
Right. Yeah, Richard Morgan, as you said. So the premise of this show is we are some unspecified hundreds of years in the future. There has been a technology developed called the cervical stack or spinal stack.
Minimum, we're like 250, because that's how long the time jump is at the beginning of this.
Yeah, and it's a disc that's implanted in your spinal column. It's when you're 1 year old. 1 year old. It seems comically large to put into a one-year-old baby. But,
that
would
look pretty hilarious.
I guess you grow into it. And when you die, you can have that stack removed from your body, assuming it's not damaged, mm-hmm. And implanted into a new body, which the people refer to as sleeves.
Yeah.
And it's not something that everyone can afford, but the ultra-wealthy obviously are all in this technology, and now they've been able to gain several lifetimes worth of continued wealth and success, and they now live in cities that are literally above the clouds, and everyone else kind of dwells in this dank underbelly. Mm-hmm. Set in San Francisco, it's very Blade Runner. It feels very Blade Runner. They got the down to the hover cars and the
animated dancing ladies on the side.
It's always
of buildings
raining, and everyone's always wearing trench coats.
Everything's neon.
And there's a lot of interesting. The things that I really like about this is it really explores what that would do to society, to where death is now optional, but the quality of your afterlife or the possibility of the afterlife relies entirely on the size of your bank account. It's like the inverse of Jesus. Rich man can't get it there. A camel is more likely to get through an eye of a needle than a rich man into the kingdom of God. Like, it's the opposite. Poor people just get their one short brutish life, and the rich people live on forever and ever. And the more you can afford, you can have like 24/7 real-time backups of your consciousness through some sort of needle network that you can also. You don't even have to travel anymore. You can get out of bed, go to a needle caster, and suddenly you're now strapped into a sleeve that's halfway across the world, or maybe the solar system, or maybe the galaxy, because there is hints that there is extra solar travel, although we haven't really seen. Everything's been grounded here on Earth that we've seen so far. But there's a lot of interesting explorations of what that would do to people's concepts of bodies and concepts of their concept of being, and what that would do to religious institutions and societal institutions, and all that stuff is super interesting to think about.
Yeah. I think the base concepts that it brings up are very intriguing to me, and I I guess that the series is trying to explore those. We'll talk about maybe how effective it is at doing that later. The show also looks great.
I mean,
we talked about the Blade Runner-esque motifs, but it's even better, honestly, than like the Blade Runner world, because it feels more to me like a super future kind of thing.
Yes.
Everything is so much larger, so much more built up, more extravagant, those kinds of things, which Blade Runner always seemed big, but in a like scaled down sort of way, if that makes any sense. Like a way that 1980 would have thought about.
Right.
Now we're talking about, 2002 for the book, 2018 for the show. So,
right.
You know, everything is larger than life, but in a way that seems like we're kind of heading that direction.
Yeah, and again, it looks like $1 million. The first director of the first episode is Miguel Sapochnik, which mm-hmm. you'll recognize as one of the darlings from Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Some of our favorite episodes directed by him. And there's a lot of just striking imagery of, like, human bodies floating in liquid with umbilical cords attached, and just, like, the way they've realized the future in crisp, 4K HD is breathtaking, and Miguel knows how to film action. He's also credited as one of the executive producers of the show. The showrunner itself is Laeta Kalogridis, who I didn't recognize her name, but you'll probably recognize a lot of stuff that she's been attached to. Like, she was the writer of the movie Shutter Island, which we liked a lot.
Okay.
Nice. She's also wrote the script for Alexander, which was the perhaps ill-conceived Colin Farrell, Alexander the Great movie.
Yeah.
She's also worked on some dodgier projects, like the television series Birds of Prey, which is meant to be kind of like the women of Batman or Batman, and the reboot of Bionic Woman. She also wrote the screenplay for Terminator Genesis, which I haven't even freaking seen. But I mean, like, so what I'm saying is the show looks good, and it's got a decent pedigree.
And I want to talk more about the look of it, because I mean there's so much to talk about here as far as just the aesthetic and how they represent certain things on the screen. Like, there's a lot of different, for lack of a better term, realities mm-hmm. in this world that they go to. So you've got the real world, which is the really wet metropolis a la Blade Runner. Then you've got kind of the VR world, which seems to be all I've seen of it so far is like a similarly skinned construct that looks a lot like the real world, mm-hmm. but is kind of envisioned in this really sort of grainy, almost has like a grid like feel to it, with the kind of like warped edges and all neon. It's really cool looking.
Yeah, I'm wondering if that's. Is that the VR? Because when we were introduced to that was a poor person from Bay City,
right?
Like I'm wondering if that's the state of the art, or is that just because it even looked like it was slightly duct taped together? And
yeah,
so
it could be.
Yeah, because there's a lot of intentional, like you can kind of gauge the age of the technology based on how gritty and modern versus how futuristic and floaty it all looks. Although. Yeah. There's also some curious things about, like, technological stasis. For example, the spinal discs, the stacks, from 250 years ago, don't really look any different than the modern ones. So, like,
true.
Has that technology just not improved?
It seems like it, because Kovac, is that how you say it?
Mm-hmm.
When he comes back after his 250-year stasis, he seems remarkably versed in the tech.
Yes.
Like, he's not super familiar. I think he's a great protagonist and a great like proxy for the audience,
right.
Because he's not super familiar with the ways that culture has changed in those 250 years, but
right.
He is very familiar with the tech.
Yeah,
so we can kind of like both catch up to speed to his speed and also use him to catch up to speed of the universe that
yeah so
creating.
So it's there's also some interesting blend of some other science fiction concepts, like they it seems like there is a little bit of the Firefly, where the protagonist was a hero of a doomed social revolution,
mm-hmm.
Malcolm Reynolds rebelling against
yeah.
the Confederation, and Kovacs character is rebel. He was a UN super soldier that it seems like was fighting against the I don't know, because we just found in his latest episode he also worked for the Protectorate, but I guess he rebelled and tried to fight against the culture that he wakes up to, which is mm-hmm. essentially the rich Meths, which are based on Methuselah, the concept of the man who lived in the Bible for 969 years.
Yeah.
That live in this clouds and kind of rule over this permanent underbelly of just, you know, schlubs.
Yeah.
But they haven't really fleshed all that out. There's also a little bit of, like, this character, Falconer, who reminded me a lot of the Shimi, I think, is her character from Cloud Atlas, where she, you know, she was like this revolutionary figure that inspired a lot of people against this kind of oppressive neo-Noir Blade Runner future. There's a lot of like remixing of these ideas, and I don't even know if they're remixing because Altered Carbon came out in 2002. I don't know when Cloud Atlas came out. Like some of this stuff, I might be that they might have gotten the idea from Altered Carbon and not the other way around.
Right.
But that's the thing, is like it feels almost premature to talk about our overall feelings, because some of these questions and
yeah.
we might have is it could be answered in further episodes. But it's weird to
right,
me
exactly.
that they're always talking about, oh, this is the latest tech and this, and oh, that's old, outdated, emoted tech, and but then yet the core technology is indistinguishable.
Yeah.
Like I kind of wish that they had made the old stacks look a little different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like even in Westworld, the first generation robots look different than, well, I mean, the second,
right.
the current generation robots are completely organic.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you would think the tech would improve on that.
What do you think of Joel Kinnaman himself as
he's a
Humphrey Bogart come Blade Runner Harrison Ford guy?
He's not particularly exciting in the role, but I think he's good for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He brings like a flat effect and a wariness that I guess is believable.
Yeah. Totally. I kind of think I might have liked the Asian guy that they had in the beginning, who is Takeshi
mm-hmm.
Kovacs.
Right.
I think I might have liked him more in the role.
Mm.
He had a little bit more like fire to him, personality-wise.
Yeah. But all we saw him...
And also like the same qualities that I think the noir side of it needed. But,
right.
Yeah, all we saw of him was that one gun battle.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's he had a lot more fire to him, but then again, like all of his flashbacks have been
yeah.
extended military sequences,
right?
But the other thing is, I like the idea that it seems like this Takeshi character has this cachet about him because he's got this devil may care attitude about his own death. Like he's constantly just flippantly like, "Well, if you don't like me, put me back in cold storage."
Mm-hmm.
Because for reasons that are not clear to us yet, I should guess the framing aspect of this is this rich Methuselah by the name of Bancroft has been murdered in such a way that I guess he is one of the wealthy that can afford real-time consciousness backups on
yeah.
the needle net. And he has been murdered in a 48-hour window because I guess it takes that. That's how often the backups occur.
Yeah.
He was murdered 15 minutes before that window was supposed to happen, and there was an attempted breach into the private resurrection network
mm-hmm.
to delete, like to essentially permanently delete him. And so he has no memory of the previous 48 hours leading up to his death, and he's hired Kovacs to go and investigate his death.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why he decided to go back and get what they call these envoys, these UN super soldiers. Like, why would he go back for someone 250 years old?
Yeah, it seems like these super soldiers have not since been duplicated, right?
Right.
Like, maybe they decided that was a bad idea, and they've never again made them. So he has some special abilities that a lot of others don't. Like,
that's
he can
true.
See through walls. He has this, like, intuition.
Well, Joel can't. I mean, the current Kovacs can't see through walls.
It's tough to tell. Like, he's got this intuition that allows him to perceive things before they
happen.
He
does have that.
Certainly.
The other superpower he's got, and which doesn't seem like it's going to manifest this, because maybe he will. Maybe Joel Kinnaman dies next episode. But
mm-hmm.
the other special ability is they were designed to be able to go sleeve to sleeve to sleeve without suffering any ill effects. Most people.
Oh, is that true?
Yeah, most people that do that, I guess, go insane because of the, you know, there's so the ultra rich clone their own bodies so they
right.
can go back again and again and again without suffering any ill effects. But these guys were conditioned and trained to go sleeve to sleeve without having any issue. But it doesn't seem like it's going to be useful if you're going to cast a handsome star and build a series around. They're like, oh, one of his abilities is he can jump body to body.
Here's the thing about this show, though. At the very beginning, the very first thing the show tells you is trust nothing you see, trust nothing you hear, let the experience wash over you in a wave. Mm-hmm. So I guess I'm going to try and sit back and let that happen. But that's the thing. Like, there's a scene in there in the second episode where the wife of Bancroft comes to seduce Kovach.
For some unknown reason.
Yeah, but she just appears in his hotel room, and I'm thinking, why do you trust that this is who they say they are?
Right.
Because there's nothing that would stop. There are clones of her out there.
She could be cross-sleeved.
Right. She could be cross-sleeved. She could be just sleeved in somebody else. Like,
triple-sleeved.
Who knows what you can do? And
she's hiding behind seven proxies with the sleeves.
Right. I would not trust anything I see, and the show is telling me that. So I honestly am not sure I'm supposed to believe that, especially when they zoom out and show some mysterious figure after it.
Yeah, I have asked myself that a lot. Like, it's hard for me to turn off that part of my brain. It's like every time I see someone, I'm like, is this an AI? Is this a clone?
Right.
Is this, like, what is considered a person in this world? And
why don't the people in the world react in that way? Because that would be a constant concern for you, living in a society where you can't tell visibly if someone is who they say they are.
Right. Like, right now we're entering an era where it's going to be trivially easy to fabricate audio and video evidence.
Sure.
And there's already a lot of smart people like, wow, I mean, what are you going to do when you need specialist training to analyze footage to see digital fuckery? Mm-hmm. And are the people that need to believe the experts when they say this is fake and this is real going to actually believe that? Well, this isn't a world where someone can look like anyone.
Yes.
Or no one.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, there's these things called AI, and I'm not sure if they're robots or they're holograms or they're a fusion of those technologies or every time this guy bumps into something, I'm like, that seems the obvious question to ask. How do I know I'm really talking to you? How do I know that, you know, when he's investigating this one particular guy who's got this particular maybe means and motive to hurt Bancroft, like, how does he know that that's not just someone has hijacked into this guy's body and he's a corporate business rival and this guy gets 5,000 death threats per year?
And the show initially sets up that concept that you can't trust anything you see or hear.
Right.
So it runs the potential. I think it avoids that by just kind of ignoring the concept that it initially sets up.
Yes.
So far, anyway. But it runs the potential of doing a Mr. Robot season 2 in my mind, which is confusing who is who and what is real to the point where the audience tunes out and doesn't care because they can't tell.
Yeah.
So, luckily, or unfortunately, however you look at it, the show seems to ignore the initial concept that it sets up, at least up to episode 2. Maybe that will change in subsequent episodes.
Yeah, I don't know if we want to talk about, if we want to continue talking about the philosophical questions of this show, because to me,
I wanted to talk about the other realities, quote-unquote realities in here, because there's a lot of stuff. There's the VR, then there's the AR, which is kind of the drug-esque sort of coding, I guess, that they put into Stacks via, like, eye injection or something. Because he buys this whole backpack full of drugs, essentially, which I think are different software programs designed to fuck you up in different ways. Which I thought was really cool, both the visual representation of it and the concept of it, which is, hey, we can just, you know, inject this code into your thing, make you feel something weird for a while, and then she can come up, the police officer can come up with a thing and just block all that.
Yeah.
And you're back to normal.
Right.
Because it's not actually physically happening to you, it's code, you know?
Yeah.
I thought that was really cool.
Okay, go ahead, because I also want to talk about the religious stuff, too.
The one other kind of reality thing they're dealing with here is the memories. And I think they weave the memories of this character in really, really well. They always sort of use the memory of whoever this woman is that was, I guess, his instructor, like some kind of trainer of his, and probably also a love interest, I assume, given that he doesn't want to live without her. The way that they kind of have her goading him on, essentially to just keep living even and finish this mission throughout the first two episodes.
Which we still don't know what the mission is exactly.
Not quite.
And also I'm guessing that, like, the other thing I got, I don't know that this is true, but I think that her voice that we keep hearing is the physical manifestation of what these, what's the name of that?
The envoys.
The envoys, precognition or intuition, they refer to it.
Yeah.
Where, like, they can kind of, they've explained it like that they're so perceptive and they get access to information across so many, like, subliminal bands, and they're just so plugged in and in tune of what they're doing that they can kind of predict what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he can see, like, a guy shifting his weight, and then he has this, like, kind of flash forward of him throwing the table at him, and he's prepared for it now. I don't know. They also mentioned that this his current body has got enhanced combat capabilities, which they haven't. His first body, like, yeah, it could see through walls and it could do all kinds of crazy shit.
Right.
They haven't really demonstrated what special abilities it has, other than maybe he's stronger.
Yeah.
But you can't really tell.
No, and there are people certainly who are stronger than him, even.
Yeah.
With, like, exoskeletons.
Yeah,
and
this one dude in the second episode stress, and he's like the second coming of Bane.
Right.
And before we talk about some other things, I want to talk about the Neo-Catholics.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is a religious branch who 400, so at least, again, what's his name?
Takeshi Kovacs.
So he's from 250 years in the past. That's when his faction was defeated. And so I'm assuming that maybe it's 100 years beyond that is you know, like, that's 100 years past when our, you know, so, like, we're 350 years into the future. There's a branch of Catholicism called Neo-Catholics where they have altered the program of their stack to where they can't be recalled because they feel like they have souls. And, you know, when you get re-sleeved, you're essentially subverting God's will, which is all well and good. I just don't know. I wish they would explain how that religious order is able to survive. It seems like everyone who believed that way would have died out and been replaced by generations.
But there are new converts all the time, right? Like, they talk about how somebody was converted, the daughter of the woman, the woman who fell from the sky in episode two, right? She was a convert to that religion.
Yeah.
And so when she converted, she had that code installed.
Yeah. So do you, I guess, is it more of like a lower class, upper class thing? It's like the lower class people don't have a hope for a resurrection, essentially, or not a real one. So it's kind of like the same thing in Christ's day. Like, you know, you've got this divide between the rich and the poor. So the poor people cling to this idea. It's like, oh, well, even if we could be resurrected, we wouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm not sure if they're getting towards that or not, or this is supposed to be something. Because it just seems very hard for me to believe that 350 years into a future where people are, like, living forever and re-sleeving at will, and, like, death is a weird, like, people are charged for organic damage because the true death is, like, very hard to administer. And it's almost like it seems like it's something that the state decides. Like, well, you fucked up so bad, you can't come back.
Yeah.
It seems odd to me that these people would have a religious institution that essentially says that's, I don't know.
Yeah, and when they threaten, like, real death to people who double sleeve or whatever, it's like Takeshi Kovacs didn't warrant real death.
Right.
He was a fucking terrorist, according to you.
Right.
What are you talking about? And you're going to let him out after 250 years on parole?
Yeah, I would really like to know. I mean, that's the thing is, like, you know, that's bound up in the question of, like, why is Bancroft doing this? Why did he select him?
Sure.
Why is his disc?
But why was he around to select
him? Yeah,
why
was his disc
question
in the prison system instead of in a glass box for the,
instead of destroyed and melted down, you know?
Right, but they also had all
slagged.
Those, they had all those discs from all the other envoys in, like, this big case in the, you know,
which
envoy
was
rebellion.
Kind of a horrifying sight. I thought that was a particularly striking image.
Yeah.
Because each of those represents a body, right?
Yeah.
And it's, I don't know, just that small space with that many dead bodies in it,
essentially. No, it reminded, it actually, I got the same feeling of like when I've seen churches
like
and
mass
like,
graves or something.
Yeah, I've seen like
yeah.
churches and catacombs in Europe where all the masonry is done in human skulls.
Yeah.
And you look up as like every one of those is a person who's walking around with their thumbs up their asses, like
right.
breathing oxygen and putting out CO2. And yeah, like there's something horrific about where a whole person lived and breathed. There's just not this tiny little memento of them.
It's like when they, in war movies where they collect the
dog tags.
A pile of dog tags. Put them in a pile, yeah.
It's the same kind of deal. So that's some cool stuff.
It is.
What other,
I mean, I just have so many questions about the concepts it raises. And I want to frame what I would normally frame as objections to... Or I guess like disappointments in the series
mm-hmm.
in the term of questions, because okay. at this point I'm not through the series yet
yeah.
and I want to give it a little more benefit of the doubt, but I have so many questions about sleeving and
yeah.
the consciousness, like what good is a biometric safe that this Bancroft guy's talking about when there are the concept of clones and sleeves out there.
Well, and somebody
could just sleeve into one of his clones and open his biometric safe.
Also, Kovacs uses as payment in this AI hotel his own blood. And I'm like,
yeah.
Well, the fuck? I mean, I guess they re-registered the DNA when you get re-sleeved.
Mm-hmm.
But that seems like...
Which, I mean, it makes sense because, like, black market sleeves, it'd be tougher to get those legitimized,
right.
I guess.
Right.
For people.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, that technology has to exist. And it's like, you know, that's... It's just the same thing. It's like, if anyone can be anything, then how in the hell do you have an idea of digital signatures and, like, all this other stuff? I don't know yeah. how any of this stuff could possibly work.
Or, like, this idea that you could ever actually fully kill, like, a meth. Because this mm-hmm. meth, who has been around for 360 years or whatever,
right.
Bancroft, has so much money at this point that he's able to upload his consciousness to a satellite location
right.
Every 48 hours. Now... Right. Why would he allow his full only backup of his consciousness to be on a network that could be accessed externally? Why not restrict it to physical access only and keep it locked in his biometric safe? Like,
yeah,
don't allow people to hack your system from a remote location if it's right. literally like you that they would be hacking and killing.
I think
we have that tech today.
As I say, it's like Iron Mountain, thing. Right? Like,
yeah.
like if you've got your backup. And it's only something that it's mission critical, and it's something that's connected to the internet, then it's at risk.
Yes.
So we have this concept called it's a company, and there's others like it, Iron Mountain, where they actually come and physically pick up your tapes, your hard drives, or whatever your backup medium is, and then ships that someplace, or it's disconnected. And it's climate controlled,
yeah.
And it's got, you know, all kinds of redundant. And sometimes they'll ship it to different regional centers just to protect it from like yeah. nuclear. Like,
make hundreds and hundreds of copies, ship them around
always,
to different planets.
But that's the thing. Like, so I'm an IT professional. You're an IT professional. We know that. But like 99% of people probably don't think about.
But
those
I mean,
things.
It's trivial to. It is trivial. Why don't the people in the bottom class, I guess, of what world we're talking about here, have their own backups? Because it is trivially inexpensive, even in modern day America, modern day planet Earth,
I know,
to back up all of your data.
Yeah.
You can spend $50 and you yeah. can just fucking do it.
Yeah.
Now, I understand that is out of range of some people. I get
right.
it. But the vast majority of people can afford that.
Right.
If it was your consciousness, if it was your life we're talking about, and you don't spend $50 to back that up.
So I'm gonna make that devil's argument. It's already super stupid to not back up your family photos and your tax returns mm-hmm. and all these other stuff. And as you just pointed out, there are turnkey solutions that are in reach of most Americans, and yet 99% of Americans don't do that.
But it's not a matter of life or death. That's the difference.
Your house burns down and mm-hmm. you lose every bit of every archive that's
it's
not
a sad
on faith.
Thing. I get
that's
it.
What I'm saying. Like, I just think the people are so cavalier.
But it's not your existence. It's not an existential thing.
Do you have a will?
No.
Do you have life insurance?
No, but that's not going to preserve me.
Right, but I'm saying, like, those are equally kind of, like, no-brainer things that everyone should have that is thought about their mortality at all, and yet you don't, and you're a smart person, and you have a realistic assessment of risks and dangers. I'm just saying, like, maybe they're saying that majority of people aren't that careful. That doesn't apply.
I've never had a cause to.
Bancroft. Bancroft sure. has 100 people worrying about sweating these details for him. It should just be. But
I don't know why there is this lower class that is seen as having having a backup of their consciousness completely out of range, because that technology is just getting cheaper and cheaper and cheaper.
No, you're right. I mean, the thing is, like, the only argument I think is, like, it would break the story they're trying to tell. Like,
it would be a commodity. It would, you would go down to a fucking Starbucks equivalent and get your consciousness dropped into another pod and store that at home or store that at a friend's house.
But, like, I could be persuaded that if we go through the Jim Jones no-brainer solution here, we cannot tell the story that we're trying to tell.
Right.
So now I want to talk about an unforced error.
Okay.
We go, this falls under the category of, like, I talked about in Battlestar Galactica of, like, you know what's cool, staying up for 24 hours. What's cooler, staying up for 7 fucking days under constant Cylon attack. Like, the nth degree to make it super fucking impressive. There's a there's a couple of low-key examples of that in this storytelling. For example, the AI hotel, for whatever reason, they give a couple of reasons. The AI hotels have fallen out of favor because they get, you know, to attach their human hosts, and they're like a possessive girlfriend, and maybe they don't, like, it's a Hotel California you can check out, but you can't ever leave. Whatever. To the extent that the hotel that Kovacs checks into has not had a paying customer in 50 years.
Yeah.
Now, this place is lavish. This place is fancy. This place is consuming a shit ton. Well-maintained. It doesn't look dirty or dusty or abandoned or sketchy at all. And how? How? If this was a virtual thing, like, if he had plugged into some, gone into a coffin and put some glasses on and all this happened, fine. But, like, some of that stuff is like, and when he goes, like, why couldn't he have said, I haven't had a paying customer in 6 months, because this is a recent thing that's happened. The AI, you know, there was a famous AI hotel that murdered some people and now people aren't checking in. Like, I believe that this place is running out of capital, but how the fuck does this AI guy stay in business for 50 years without any income?
I mean,
that doesn't make any sense.
No one made him. I agree with you. The only explanation I could possibly come up with is the 200 previous years were pretty lucrative.
Like,
they've been banking for a while, and then...
Well, maybe close your shit down then, dude, go hit the A. Because there's also, like,
I really love this, this AI community.
The AI community where they're talking about their, like, different business ventures.
Yeah,
and
this is cool.
Maybe Poe is just a really good gambler. He takes these guys, he likes running his hotel, and he likes people, and he's hoping they come back.
Maybe.
Because the other AIs are openly talking about exploiting humans, and I think, like, making snuff films out of them. And
of their experiences,
I think that's the hint of the one guy. He's essentially, like, they're not spelling it out, which, I don't know, because this show is not shy about, you know, extreme violence and sexuality.
The AI stuff... I can't tell at this point if it is sort of an undercover, like, behind-the-scenes thing that's happening, where the AI is starting to turn on the humans, or if this is something the humans know about and it's just part of an accepted societal thing.
Right.
Either way, I find it super fascinating, and I hope they explore it more.
Right. Yeah, but there's a couple of other things like that. What was the other thing that really bugged me? You talked about the one, which is, like, that might be a storytelling necessity. There is the AI that's been in a hotel, like, for 50 years. There's
where do sleeves come from?
Yeah, because
early on, like, at the near the very beginning of this show, they set up the idea that the government has sleeves that they give to criminals once their time is served, or once they go on parole, and you just kind of get the sleeve that you're given. And they use the example of a 7-year-old girl who's put into the body of, like, a 60-year-old woman. And her parents are really dismayed that that was the sleeve she got.
Because she was in a hit-and-run accident by a drunk driver, and the state's got a free resleeving program. And
it's like a welfare program for sleeveless.
This is the scratch-and-dent sleeve that you get, like, you know.
Right. But where do the sleeves come from? Because I would think there would be, if anything, a shortage of sleeves compared to the number of stacks that they have at any given time.
Yeah, but that just goes to show you how expensive the whole receiving process is. So I think they
mentioned
that,
like... Right, but
where
did they get that sleeve? Where did they get that old lady's sleeve?
Prisoners. I think when you're a prisoner, they download your stack and save it in storage, and then they take your body and give it to somebody.
But here's the problem with that. Stacks don't degenerate.
Right.
Human bodies do.
Right.
So you inevitably come up against the idea of a massive sleeve storage or sleeve shortage.
I think you have to manufacture sleeves.
Yeah, right?
They are. They got absolutely, clones.
So, but the government is not producing clones.
How do you know that?
At least we haven't seen it yet. I'm going off the first two episodes. And if they are producing clones, why are they using these old busted ass recycled clones to give to or recycled?
Well, they mentioned that cloning is hideously expensive, which is the other
right.
That's the other kind of Battlestar problem is they introduced Bancroft's personal clone stash.
Mm-hmm.
And it's literally like a 10 story silo of hundreds and hundreds of copies of him and his wife.
Yeah.
Which why the fuck would you need that many clones spun up and ready, like they're ready to go at a moment's notice?
I don't know. I mean, for whatever reason.
That's like Hossein's like, it's like one of those things like, you know, it'd be one thing if we went into like one Tony Stark style room that's a rotunda and it's got like 16 copies of him.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool, but you know what's cooler? A rotunda 20 stories hall died. It's got 1,000 of his copies. Like,
yeah,
I don't know. Some of this stuff just seems a little goofy.
The only thing I can think on that end is that he's using this needle cast thing pretty often.
Right.
And so he's got to have his clones distributed around the galaxy or whatever.
But why would they be in this silo? Like, yes, that would...
Maybe he's, like,
you need a Tony Stark rotunda on every planet.
Right.
And in every continent. Why the fuck would you have a giant rotunda in the middle of San Francisco?
Yeah, you wouldn't want to manufacture them and then ship them. Or, shit, maybe it's less expensive to do that. I don't know.
Maybe.
There's some weird economy.
You think you could, like, send the DNA information and just needle cast over there. But, like, there's a lot of those...
I would also think that you could make a radio here cheaper than in China and plus shipping, right?
That's true.
You just never know.
You know, that's the thing. It's like, I'm not, like, I like what you said. It's like, I'm not necessarily being critical of this concept. I'm just saying some of this stuff doesn't make sense in the world building. Yeah. And maybe they'll have satisfying explanations for all that. Or maybe this will, because like, I remember there's a lot of questions I had about the economics of like the world of the Expanse that they didn't start delving into and until season two.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that is definitely something I'm worried about.
Me too. Especially after these first two episodes. The other concept, which I find completely ludicrous,
mm-hmm.
is the idea that there is any physical money, physical currency of any kind floating around in this century.
Yeah.
Dude, we're on the cusp of getting rid of digital or of physical currency right now in the real world.
Right.
Come on, 350 years
into
the future, we're still
plastic bills into a stripper
into
machine?
Into a fucking rolling thing that pulls them into a mechanic? No.
Yeah.
No, we're looking into something. It's measuring our eye, and it's taking the money out. Or the DNA thing.
Right. And so some of this stuff is like, any fiction that's written before the last 10 years seems like it dramatically underestimated this internet thing.
Yeah.
And like how that will be like what kind of societal impact that would have, and the facilitation of like digital transfers of currency and cryptocurrency mm-hmm. and all that stuff. But like 2002 is right on the edge where like, dude, you should have seen which way the wind was blowing.
Uh-huh.
Like, why the fuck would you have a digital medium to transfer money when you could just have like some kind of thing implanted in your wrist, or maybe it's even tied to your fucking stack?
Yeah.
You know, because that thing seems like a great unique identifier. Like,
sure,
you know,
does.
There's lots of different sleeves, but you only have the one stack.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you can do what would they call it? Twin sleeve.
Well, or dual sleeve needle casting, right? He's got to have multiple stacks to do that.
I guess that's true. Yeah,
so
but
you
they'd
go
all
from
be,
one stack
they'd
to
probably
another.
All be uniquely identified.
Yeah, I would think so. Hardware identification.
Yeah, but as far as your shortage of sleeves, I feel like that, I don't know, like it seems like there's an unlimited demand, but they're so expensive, and there's a limited supply that only the wealthy can have them. So I feel like since everyone is mandatory to have these stacks implanted in them at the age of one, and like say only a few percentage of humanity can actually afford to have them, you're going to have a near unlimited supply of sleeves available between jail and people getting sick and people going brain. Of course, I guess if you're brain dead, then that sleeve is busted.
But, well, I mean, like every time somebody dies, a sleeve is lost. Every time somebody is born, a sleeve is gained. So I guess the birth rate must be significantly higher than the death rate. But I mean, I don't know. We've spread across the galaxy essentially at this point. So
right.
there are plenty of sleeves out there, human beings.
Right. Maybe AIs like kidnap humans off the street and jack their sleeve, you know. Like that seems like if you're making VR snuff films, then
the other glaring omission, and I feel like maybe in 2002 you wouldn't have seen this coming, but the lack of automation in this society is astonishing.
Yeah.
Because it's something, you know, we harp on here a lot at Bald Move, and we discuss it a lot because it is happening, and automation is going to take over large swaths of our economy within the next 10 years, 20 years.
Yeah, you got flying cars that are flown by individuals.
Right.
Like, that's the thing. Like, that's what's going to date, you know, near future tech in the next 10 years. Like, if you've got a car, if you got someone driving a car and they're not some kind of outlaw or throwback to a bygone, like a fucking,
if they don't hack the car and put their own DIY steering wheel on
it, seeing a guy driving their own car would be like seeing somebody in one of those massive front wheeled bicycles in a top hat. Like, you might see it in Portland.
Right. Yeah.
You know, you might see it down in Austin, but that's certainly not going to be something you remark upon seeing. Like, dear God, someone is in the driving and it looks like he has a wheel in his hand.
Right. And the fact that we're 20 years out from that taking over essentially all of transportation, and then going 350 into the future and none of it has happened.
And you still
at
have
all.
People sleeping floors, and you still got people.
It's just completely missing the boat on the automation stuff. But, you know, 2002, it wasn't quite the thing it is now.
Right. And, you know, the other thing is, like, fantasy doesn't have this problem because you can always hand wave to, like, magic. Like,
sure.
It's been often remarked on that George Martin's walls are, like, preposterously tall. Like, there's he describes them as, like, I don't know, 700 feet tall. And when the digital effects guys on Game of Thrones showed them their mock-up of the wall, he's like, Jesus Christ, that thing is huge. He's like, actually, George, it's half the size you said it was in the book. Like, there's this like, but no one asks, like, my God, how in the world did these guys 10,000 years ago build this giant ice wall? Well, that's probably magic.
Yeah.
You know, there's, like, all this, like, but science fiction, it's the science and the fiction that always fucks you, because you've got to come up with a plausible, you know, you don't have to explain how it works. Like, the Enterprise has a structural integrity field to explain how it can zoom around. Like it's got, like, some bullshit sci-fi thing that, like, at least lets you know that, hey, we've thought about this. It's going to be okay.
Yeah.
And the more there's this value you can get caught on where if you don't address it at all, it's a plot hole. And if you address it too much and too detailed, then people start poking holes in it. There's this like vaguely plausible zone that you got to stay in.
You got to lampshade it.
Yeah, and Altered Carbon feels like it's all over the map. Like, it's world building and not giving a fuck about whether it makes sense, and it's world building and then over explaining some things. And I think, like, that's a danger. But again, I'm not ready to throw it in the wood chipper, because it's possible there are clever solutions to all that. Or it could be also the price of admission. Like, if you want to enjoy this particular type of story, because it keeps on, like, if you go down, like, if my suspension disbelief crashes a little bit more, I'm going to start asking questions like, how the fuck do you kill this wealthy guy? Because he was in the middle of a business deal in, like, a wealthy district when he got killed. Where are the cameras? Mm-hmm. How can no one have seen the last moment there? You just showed me a fly. Mm-hmm. That is tailing this, like, why wouldn't a guy like that have an army of these flies? It's unobtrusively films everything.
Follows
for this very
constantly.
Reason. Right, yeah. Right.
But then you're talking, oh, well, an EMP could take those out.
Right.
You know?
Like, why is he on a 48-hour window on backups? Why isn't this thing, like, if you can back up this guy's existence in a finite period of time, then why isn't this constantly backing up all the time? Mm-hmm. But it's like, I feel like the answers to that are, like I was alluding to, if it worked that way, this plot couldn't be told.
Sure.
It's kind of like before cell phones were invented, there's whole types of horror films and mystery films and spy thrillers that just aren't possible.
Right.
Like, you can't tell half of the shit that James Bond was able to get away. You can't do half of the stuff you can in old horror films, because the reality is everyone's got a device that can summon police within several minutes and tracks your location to the nearest 3 meters and can also take high resolution video and pictures. And what happened to the grainy pictures of Bigfoot? since cell phones are techno. Where are the crisp 1080 pictures, motion stabilized pictures of Bigfoot?
Yeah.
We had all kinds of shitty, grainy ones, but now that we've got the ability to perfectly record our surroundings, suddenly there's no pictures of Bigfoot. What the fuck?
The Bigfoot suit technology hasn't caught up with the cameras.
Right. Why did miracles stop happening when we were able to take pictures and record things? Like, there's those hoary kind of limits to this science fiction world that if you stop and think about it, they don't make any sense. But if you,
yeah,
you know, how else are you going to tell the story?
And that's the thing. I actually think this show, if you disregard like how you think the world would have changed in actuality versus how it has in this universe that they've created, it does some really strong world building stuff.
Yeah.
I think they use the screen time in the first couple of episodes to really establish a strong universe, and the sleeving stuff is some of the best stuff they do. I think like there are other things around the edges that they don't do quite as well, but I feel like when they came up with this concept of sleeving and the stacks, they kind of put a lot of thought into it right up front. So that's definitely the strongest part of the show, which is kind of the central theme of the show as well. So
yeah,
that's good.
Yeah, no, that's. You're right, and like part of me, the other uncomfortable truth is I feel like that this show treads on a lot of the same ground that Westworld does.
Mm-hmm.
Westworld was just a slower, more thoughtful take on that, and it still had problems, but like if this movie was made 2 years ago, I think I would have had a lot less reservations because I'd just be so hungry for something that is pondering these issues that's like, you know, fuck it, I don't care what are the problems. Like, this is stuff that people kind of need to see and think about.
Yeah.
Because that's the other one of the jobs of science fiction is make you contemplate the problems of tomorrow before they get there so that we're not just, like, completely oblivious to what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And that's one of the weird things is, like, I feel like automation and AI has grown, like has gone from like, oh, you know, these fucking robots will never beat us playing the chess to like, they're going to be running our lives in the space of a single generation. And we just weren't prepared for that.
Absolutely.
We weren't prepared to wake up in the morning and C-3PO's watching us jerk off or whatever. Like we weren't ready for that to happen as quickly as it looks like it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. And I don't see a lot of stuff, a lot of novels, a lot of fiction being written about automation yet.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of curious when that's going to happen because like you look at automation, we were talking about this earlier, and a world in which automation has taken over is not a very compelling narrative, right?
Yeah.
Because it almost entirely excludes human beings. Now,
right.
I think in my mind, the compelling thing there is how human beings react to it and how we try to get along with it and, you know, sort of bend it to our will.
Right.
What's the politics around it? Because
Otherwise,
it's just like these computers doing lightning fast things that humans can't even perceive perfectly.
Because like, you know? After my first episode, I'm thinking like, well, why are they sleeving in the bodies? Why don't they sleeve into like artificial constructs? They're like,
sure.
Like have insanely fast reflexes and like fuck your combat augmentations. Like essentially everyone's living inside T-800s or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm starting to think of like, well, what would that combat look like if you've got like combat that happens on imperceptible human like it's entirely possible that like two AIs squaring off would look like a blur and then one of them just gets disintegrated.
But imagine how
gets torn apart. It'd be look like a blur and then a cloud of parts come out and that's it. Would that be interesting?
Use that. That would be fucking amazing on screen. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Like
I don't know because that's essentially how combat robots in Twilight works and it's not. It's goofy.
Well,
it's good.
Sure.
Two blurs and then someone's head rolls out of it.
I mean, but you could do things like, oh, the Kovash can actually slow time down to see things. Like when it's perceived through his POV, it's actually slow enough for him to catch, you know, and see the details. Whereas sometimes you could show it in insanely fast motion and sometimes Kovash view.
Right. No, it's tough because, you know, that's like I was talking to you before we started recording this. I started reading Andy Weir, who wrote The Martian's latest book about this lunar colony called Artemis. And I was praising like some of it. Like he's got this like really cool economic system that's based on like the cost on everything. The moon is you're paid in these things called slugs, which stands for soft landed grams.
Okay.
So essentially, they fire magnetic cannons from Earth, and they soft land on the moon. And the cost of it to get through that process is a fixed amount. So you can just essentially buy and trade those slugs. Like that's the real money on the moon. And like that's a really
They worth like a lot more than the dollar?
It seems
like they would.
And that's
be.
The thing. Like only wealthy people can. That's the hook of the book is only wealthy people can afford to live on the moon.
Yeah.
But like a billionaire is not gonna unplug his toilet, right, or sweep the floor.
Right. So he's got to bring the.
You have to bring this underclass of people that are living in these. But they still get paid absurdly expensive rates compared to the Earth. But everything's super freaking expensive on the moon.
Right.
However, also, where the hell is the automation?
Yeah, yeah.
There are people driving buggies and there are people sweeping the floors and they're doing all this other stuff because, like, that's the thing. Like, yeah. I don't think anyone. Like that. Even the Martian is kind of ridiculous. They didn't have like
maybe it's a cost cost per work value. Like a human can do so much.
Yeah,
that maybe it's cheaper to get a human up there than the materials to build a robot to do all the jobs that
a human
could do.
Talking about sweeping the floor, we have Roombas.
Sure.
That like I'm thinking,
but a human can sweep the floor and also make you a meal and also do 1,000 other things.
Right. I'm saying maybe it's definitely cheaper. You'd have to have, but like they do pay people to sweep the floors. Why isn't a Roomba doing at least that part?
Yeah.
So like it's even the best hard science fiction gets surprised by how the world actually ends up working.
Sure.
Yeah. Like even Star Trek. Look at Star Trek. Star Trek is up until the current. All of Star Trek is completely ridiculous because Gene Roddenberry didn't know how dense we could store things and how fast we could transmit information. And like he envisioned the Enterprise of these flying supercomputers that you have to program with isolinear chips and all that stuff. And that's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
None of that would actually happen. In fact, the fact that we're flying a starship with thousands of people and their families is ridiculous. It would be largely automated. Yeah, you know,
right.
You've got a society that can build something like Data, but we still have chief engineers crawling through Jeffrey tubes that are built at human scales and like what the fuck, you know?
That's kind of why I'm interested in a lot of near future stuff at this point because that's only accelerating, right? The idea that you can predict the future is getting more and more ridiculous because of how fast technology is changing now.
Right.
In the 80s, like when we first had our personal computers, we could say, ooh, think of how the world is going to be changed by this one piece of technology that has gotten a little bit better.
Yeah.
Now it's like every other day there's something new to consider in technology.
Yeah. Yeah. And God knows I couldn't write anything
that would not
have plot holes. That's one of the reasons that's honestly one of the reasons I haven't written creative more because I get to this stage like, oh, that's a really cool concept. And I start thinking about it like, well, that's stupid. That would never work.
Right.
And then I can't. It's unsolvable. And instead of just being like, fuck it, where I'm going to make the story like that, I get locked up and kaboom, kaboom. So
that's how it goes.
I've heard through the grapevine called Jim Jones that season 4 or episode 4 is kind of like what I always say is like, you know, we always say when people are like, oh, you know, Leftovers wins all these baldies and blah, blah, blah. But like, you know, I saw his first episode and I don't get it. And I'm like, I always tell people like, okay, you get through the third episode with Doctor Who and you don't like it, then bail. Because that's essentially everything the show has to offer. It's just more it's just more of it.
Mm-hmm.
Episode 4, I guess, is that version of this series episode.
So I've read, so I
want to at least go watch through season episode 4 to see if, you know, plus once I articulate these concerns, like, I mean, they'll either answer them great or the storytelling around them will be so good that you forget about it. But I don't know. Because
if neither
you
of those things are true, we probably won't watch it.
Right. You know? And then the other thing is, like, I thought that, like, this is a single-shot book, and, like, it's always hard to, like, adapt something, and then, like, well, what are you going to do with future seasons? But I guess I've also found in my research that this is a whole series based on this Kovacs character. So it seems like it would have legs if the legs are sturdy and worth walking on.
Yeah. And I'm excited to watch the rest of it. And we'll definitely be back to talk more about it, regardless of how far we get.
What do you think about the sex and violence on this show?
I thought it was actually well done.
I thought it's well done too. I'm somewhat surprised that How am I trying to say this?
I don't think it was particularly more violent than anything I've seen before.
No, no. I mean, so far, I'm more talking about the, like, 350 years in the future, everything still is recognizably this modern, like in art, like contemporary. Like, okay. All of their, mm-hmm. like, the strip club looks exactly like I, like, if I went back into Roman days... Uh-huh. And went to a whorehouse or a strip club or whatever, and anywhere the escorts and sex workers of the day hung out, it would not look anything like a modern day strip club.
Yeah.
Why does a strip club 350 years in the future look like? I mean, exactly. They got guys looking through peepholes and jerking off. They've got neon signs everywhere. They've got gross, like, on the nose. You know, thank you for going to the jerking it off. Hope you come again. And like. Mm-hmm. Why hasn't any of that stuff changed and evolved any?
I mean, I was reading that as like the seedy, like he's in the really seedy places. But
It seems like all of San Francisco is seedy.
Yeah, at least below the clouds.
So sure. Maybe that's what it is. Because like that, you know, that's I guess that's the truth. Like the upper crust culture is still. Although I mean, Mrs. Bancroft is running around in a see-through. Yeah. Essentially sheet.
Uh-huh.
So it's not everything. It's just, I just wondered like if
she's got her best Bull and Branch on.
I'm trying to get to ideas. Like it seems like when like in Edwardian and Victorian times, right? When social mores were very buttoned up, like the private life seemed like it was a lot looser. Yeah. And like the fiction was a lot more scandalized and, you know, it was very popular to have like, you know, Pulp Fiction kind of stuff and you know, there's public executions and whatnot. But then, like, when society becomes a little less repressed, then, like, there's a response to that. I think it changes the culture and entertainment. And this just seems like it's open and in your face to, like, everywhere in San Francisco is essentially the red light district of Amsterdam.
Right.
So, like, what is the corresponding balance that brought to society? Because what is...
It's tough to tell because
if everything is sexed to the nth degree, what is sexy? Like, I was kind of expecting to see the upper-class people, like extremely conservatively dressed because that would be provocative. Like, oh, I can't see what her breasts look like. But nope, they're just pretty much out there under thin gauze.
Right. Yeah, I was going to say that, I mean, Kovach is actually... seeking out those kinds of places actively, mm-hmm. but you're right, even above the clouds, you've got the scantily clad wife of Bancroft.
And Bancroft, when he comes into a meeting room, he's just hanging dong, like fully naked, like doesn't bother to put on clothes before he starts addressing all of his workers. And it's weird because it's...
Well, it's like this idea of what is this shell, right? Like what is the sleeve to me? What does it mean to me? What does it mean to my family? And they do touch on those concerns, which I think is, you know, like I said before, the sleeve stuff is some of the best considered stuff, where they start to ask those questions.
Yeah. There's another question I've tried to ask like two different times, and I keep thinking of something else I want to talk about. But how does Kovach, does he value his life?
I don't think so, no.
Because I have this theory that he values his life as much as anybody does, but he knows that his best play is to do this devil may care. Like if the rich guy threatens him with cold storage, his best plan is to be like, well, fuck you, I don't care.
Right, but that's not what
we see. Because the rich guy expects everyone to be like, oh my God, not that, oh my God, not that. Like, because there's flashes where, like, he's had these confrontations with these rich and powerful people who could end him and give him the true death or whatever, where afterwards it seems like he's a bit shaken, and also it seems like he does believe in this mission that this fucking falconer woman has given her.
Yeah.
So I think he does value his life and feels like he has a mission, but he's playing this like devil may care just to kind of mesmerize the rich people.
I don't think he does. I mean, we see a scene of him where he's ready to blow his own stack out, right? And the only reason that he doesn't is because the falconer lady comes to him in a vision and says, don't do that. Stay on mission.
Right. That's
like, I don't think he cares whether he lives or dies.
Well, I mean, so I guess it's... To the extent that falconer person is a part of him, because that's the other thing, is like I don't know how much of this is an inner monologue he's having and how much of this is like some kind of weird fusion of his like slightly paranormal abilities. But like the unit that is his psyche and his sleeve and his special abilities combined doesn't want him to kill himself or he would have killed himself.
Sure.
So I feel like that's kind of the interesting thing that that Joel guy is as I feel like he's doing a good job of playing that.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's wearing his like, well, fuck you, put me in cold storage is kind of like his leverage against the rich people and the police and all this stuff,
mm-hmm.
because it's a shocking attitude that no one in this world has.
Right.
Like even the hard-bitten military vet who's trying to avenge his daughter values his life enough not to throw it away because of the impact it would have on it. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But this guy, this Kovach guy, stands aside that he really doesn't fucking care.
Did you get the impression that...
Except for he does.
The woman in the first episode who's killed during the firefight with the Asian Kovach...
Might actually secretly be the Falconer.
Yeah, that she was her.
As they haven't established.
They haven't confirmed that, okay. But I mean, it I don't almost know why. Certainly yeah, is, right?
I'm.
Although this show tells you not to believe anything you see. Or
yeah,
either, so.
let the
experience wash over you.
I also feel like there's a little bit of hint of the fact that she, the way they talked to each other, that she was not subservient, but she was less experienced and less connected, and he was like the boss. Yet in any time where she appears as the Falconer, it seems like she was always the leader.
Right, absolutely.
So I don't know why they would be having these private conversations as if Kovach is the senior mentor and she's the follower that has less abilities and
Well, I mean, she could be his superior officer and also have less abilities, like.
Sure.
The envoy thing.
That
she
happens.
Might not be a part of that, right? She might just be the commander of the unit of envoys or whatever.
Right. Okay. I think that I definitely had.
I'm just not sure yet.
I definitely had that thought as well. I just like it's hard. It's we don't know enough to be sure.
Mm-hmm.
It also could because he refers to her as a friend in a later, like when he's talking to that one girl at the Envoy Holocaust Museum.
It's also possible that was his sister. His younger sister.
Yeah.
Because don't they have, like, flashbacks of them playing together and stuff?
I think so.
Okay.
But it's tough because, again, are we sure that Kovacs, was he born Asian?
I think so.
His first name sounds Asian, but his last name
doesn't. I want to say this is the first different sleeve that he's been put into.
Uh-huh. Huh.
Because he survived whatever battle took out the rest of the envoys, right?
Yeah, but I guess. But then they say one of the envoy's special abilities is they can jack into all kinds of different sleeves and be combat operational from day one. So like,
but they're
his
using
freak
that.
Out in the beginning of seeing himself as a white dude. This seemed odd based on what I found out later about his abilities and the life that I think he would lead as an envoy.
Yeah, so
it'd be like James Bond waking up in a tuxedo and going, "Ah!" You know, like having
Well, in the book, apparently it's like an identity thing, like an Asian, like he wants to be an Asian man, not a white man. He identifies as that, so he's very dismayed by the fact that he's put into a white man's body.
Hmm.
Apparently, I haven't read the books, but that's what I read in an article.
I wouldn't mind a little bit more of that, like why that would be the cultural attachment to your race and identity at that point.
Yeah, and I wonder how far into the sleeving generation he was locked up during.
Right.
Like, is this something that culture had adjusted to, that society had adjusted to, this mm-hmm. idea of sleeving, or was it a pretty new thing at the time?
Yeah.
Because that could explain why he's so freaked out about it. I don't know.
Yeah. No, like I said, like you said, we don't have enough information.
But 250 years into the future, it's clear that sleeving is just the norm, right? Like there's also like a class disparity here where the wealthy can just take on sleeves. They don't really have much attachment to their bodies.
Right. In fact, there's advertisements for people to like.
They're like car upgrades.
You know,
whatever.
Like these naked women saying, put your wife inside me. And then the implication being, then put yourself inside your new hot wife.
Whereas I could see the attachment to the body in the lower class because they can't afford to re-sleeve.
Mm.
You know, their body might be the only body they get simply because they can't afford to buy a new one.
Yeah, that's interesting that like that's one of the few kind of like lotteries, like genetic lotteries, like you can be born beautiful. That's such a huge advantage in a future where you can be resleeved, know, you can look like some fucking asshole.
Right. Being wealthy is the only like real advantage. Being
you
born
can,
wealthy.
You can look like a grotesque being and then afford to have a hot new sleeve.
Right.
But then, like, yeah, what is this, how does society adjust to that? Like, it's like kind of crazy, like, when Tom Cruise gets his teeth Invisaligned, you know, when he's 40. Like, isn't that weird? Like, you're one of the most conventionally beautiful people on the planet, but, like, you want your teeth to be perfect now. How do we feel about, or that one girl from, was it, Flashdance, who had a very distinctive nose?
Oh, yeah.
And then
yeah.
she got it fixed, and then she didn't really, because, like, that's the thing that made her special. Like, I wonder, like, what does the paparazzi think when some dude re-sleeves into a different look, as I like talked about, like, oh, who are you wearing?
That's
literally
a really good question. Yeah.
what skin are you wearing? Literally. I don't know. There's a lot of like interesting societal questions that the show does not seem to,
they haven't addressed in episode
address
two
or touch on. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see if they do.
How dare they?
Future episodes.
How dare they?
They haven't given me all the information.
Yeah.
In the first two episodes.
Sons of bitches.
I'm out.
I saw that Alex Graves is another Game of Thrones darling, a little bit more controversial than Miguel Sapochnik, is credited as a director of two upcoming episodes. I think that episode three, for example, coming up.
Maybe AMC should take a look at some of these shows and say this is how you crew up correctly.
Uh-huh.
You take directors and writers and producers from other well-known, popular, successful TV shows, and you do that, as opposed to taking unknowns from SpongeBob.
Yeah. Although there were rumors that this show cost $150 million to make.
All right. Walking Dead could afford it.
That, you know what? That's tantalizing. The idea of what would $150 million season two of Walking Dead looked like.
Mm-hmm.
Probably not even as
and
hard.
And a 10-episode one at
probably
that.
Probably not. Yeah. What are you going to do?
All right.
I was gratified to see that this is not the cursed 13-episode season of Netflix. Because, like, every time I see that, a little part of me dies inside, because I'm thinking, this is not the ideal number of episodes to tell this story. This is just what Netflix wanted contractually to hit whatever fucking metric they've got.
Yeah.
As soon as I saw it was 10 episodes, I'm like, all right, I feel like there's not going to be a lot of fat on this here carcass.
Yeah, and it's not actually, I don't think it's produced by Netflix. I think this is one of those Netflix originals that is purchased. Yeah.
Interesting.
From another production company.
Yeah, I guess it's been in like 15-year development hell. And finally the rights to it lapsed, which is how Laida was able to snap it up.
Okay.
But yeah, she did. She got some of the best in the biz, and we'll see how it goes. But are we entering a golden age of science fiction now?
I hope so.
The Expanse. Yeah. We got Altered Carbon, we got Westworld, we got Star Trek is back and compelling. Like, science fiction is dormant for a long time, just like fan. In fact, in Star Wars, if you want to throw that hat into the ring, fantasy was dormant for a long, long time. And then it came back with the Lord of the Rings, and then it's not really ever gone away. And I kept on thinking, like, I like Lord of the Rings, I like Game of Thrones, but where's me my sci-fi? And see, it feels like in the last 3 years, it's just...
They Black
rebooted
Mirror.
Blade Runner. They got Black Mirror. There's a lot of really quality science fiction shows on right now. Travelers
is okay.
Well, they had the OA and Sense8. Like, there's been a lot of really high concept, good science fiction.
I'm just waiting for the automation based one.
Mm. Yeah, something like automation based.
Yeah. That's what it's called.
So Jim and I were talking about, like, we're, two episodes in, we're not entirely sold on the show, and but we're not saying that the show is unsaleable, but what I think we're going to do is we're going to watch the rest of the show, come back and do a wrap-up of season one of Altered Carbon, and if we really like it, then it will be making the short list for consideration when it come out for season two in some way. Kind of the same way we did for Stranger Things.
Yep.
And I wouldn't eliminate the idea of a season one rewatch leading up to season two, because that seemed to work really well for Stranger Things.
Sure.
So that seems like a perfectly cromulent way to go forward. And that's it for our thoughts on Altered Carbon for right now. We'll be back in some indeterminate period of time to finish it up. And there'll be more Bald Move TV to come. I know we still want to talk about Star Trek, which I haven't gotten around to seeing yet. But we'll be getting that real soon as well. And until next time, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.